Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, 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 listeners. You've just tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. I'm Rosita De Jesus, and I am joined with my brother and co-host in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Gill. How you doing, Sifu Bob?
I'm doing really good this week. Remember last week I told you I wasn't feeling that well.
Yeah, you sounded like you had like the serious crud.
I had the nastiest virus or flu. I was laid up for a week. I haven't taken this many sick days in 10 years. So I went to the doctor on Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
I've got this great doctor I've had for about 17 years. She's this Filipina, beautiful, great sense of humor, nice, great bedside manner. I thought so, anyway. So she said, Bob, what's wrong? I said, you know, doc, I feel real crappy. But I use the more mature word for crappy.
Uh-huh.
And because that's how I talk to her, you know,
right.
And she's fine with it. And
oh, cool.
And I said, well, doc, I feel real loopy. She looks me right in the eye and she said, how is that different from any other time?
Oh, gotta love that doctor.
I tell her jokes every time I see. In fact, I haven't seen her in so long, she misses me coming in and telling her the jokes, because it was funny, about 10 years ago, she was 8 months pregnant with her final child,
uh-huh.
And I had both my kids in there, they were really young, so I pull her ear in, and I told her the old story. I said, hey, did you ever hear the joke about, or did you ever hear the story about having sex with an optometrist? And she says, no, what? I says, yeah, the whole time. All they're saying is it better like this or better like this? And
oh
she
God.
Lost it. And this week was fine. And you know me. You've known me a couple years now almost.
Yeah.
There are certain things you don't tell me. You don't, unless you want a response to. You don't ask me, do I look fat in this? You don't ask me, does my butt look big? No. Unless you want a direct answer, don't ask me. So, I was at Starbucks. You know the Starbucks I frequent. You've been there.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
this
yeah.
New girl there didn't know me. Thank
oh,
God. She walks up to me, and she hands me a coupon, and she says, here, next time you come in, you can get a free tall blonde. I went, oh, my God, I've always wanted one of those.
Wait a minute. And this lady said?
She stopped in her tracks and she didn't know how to take that.
Oh, I bet all the other employees just tapped her and said, it's just Bob, right?
That pretty much. And one of them said, yeah, next time you can get the brunette and the redhead.
That's fun. That's funny. You can get a blonde with this coupon. What's a blonde?
Yeah.
Is that a coffee?
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, blonde and coffee.
Oh, gosh. That's so funny.
I've already got one. Oh.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've got a really great show today. Normally, we're on at 6 p.m. every Sunday, except every third Sunday, which is today, Sunday the 20th. We're on at 11 a.m. for the Sunday brunch show, and we try to have forums or special guests that come on to act as facilitators for forums and stuff like that. And we are actually joined by our special guest co-host, Patricia Smith. How you doing, Patricia?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for joining us. You get a round of applause.
Welcome.
Aww. Thank you.
Yay. And for our listeners, Patricia got the opportunity to be one of our co-hosts by correctly answering one of our weekly trivia questions. And I forgot which trivia question it was, because you actually answered two, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
Yeah, but that's something we do every week. So for those of you that are listening, later on we're going to be doing the trivia question of the week. So if you'd like a chance to be a guest co-host and have some fun with me and Sifu Robert, just be the first caller with the first correct answer on the trivia question, and you'll be good to go. All righty. So let's move on with the show. I want to start off with a few shout-outs. Now, on Facebook, on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, we normally put out shout-outs, and if our followers on the page have any events or tournaments or seminars or anything like that, they usually post them on there. And that's also a call to our listeners. If you haven't yet followed the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, follow the Facebook page, so that way if you have any events, martial arts, speaking engagements, what have you, put it on there, and we'll make it a point to announce all of them every week. But my first shout out wants to go to all the listeners of the Dynamic Dojo radio show and the other show on our network, the Century Health Talk, that is hosted by Lynn Yancha and Aaron Kester, two shows on the Seika network, ours and Century Health Talk. And we've only been on the air for 2 months, okay, once a week. Actually, yeah, once a week. And Century Health Talk has been on every other week. They've only had a few shows. And we already have over 8,500 listeners. 8,500 listeners.
Wow.
I am pretty happy about that. So I want to shout out to all the listeners out there. Thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting the Seika Network, the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show, and Century Health Talk. Two great shows, I think. I'm not being biased or anything.
Of course not.
But I also want to put a shout out there to all the other great martial arts shows out there on Blog Talk Radio. So for our listeners, add these to your podcast playlist. We've got Alan Goldberg's Action Power Hour, I believe it's called. And all you have to do is look up Alan Goldberg on Blog Talk Radio. We've also got Daniel J. Vena's Martial Arts Talk. That's Daniel, V-E-N-A, Daniel Vena. We've also got the DocRadio.net network that has a ton of great shows. We've got Grandmaster Daryl Sargent's Modern Combat Masters. We've got Making the Connection with Soke Hassan Kalik. Professor Tom Curry's Warrior Talk Radio. I'm forgetting one. Oh, another great show called Each One, Teach One. And those are great shows on the Doc Radio Network. And all those shows are dedicated to the life and teachings of the late Dr. Moses Powell, a very popular and well-known martial artist. So really great shows. And what really touches my heart also, and this is another shout-out, this shout-out and heartfelt thanks goes to Dana Stamos of WorldwideDojo.com. Dana had taken the time to take our show and Alan Woodman's show. Oh, that's another one. Sorry, Alan, I almost forgot you. I'm talking without any notes. So we don't want to forget Alan Woodman's Sidekick Talk Radio. Great show, great publications and stuff. Got to check out Sidekick Talk Radio. But Dana Stamos took the time to take all of our show embedded marquees and put them on WorldwideDojo.com. Now, if any of you out there have never seen or heard of WorldwideDojo.com, go check it out, because it is the biggest resource of information, entertainment news, martial arts news that I've ever seen. It's all in one place. Go check out Dana Stamos' site, WorldwideDojo.com. And I also want to thank from the bottom of my heart Shihan Alan Woodman of Sidekick Talk Radio of taking the time also to gather all of our embed codes and forwarding those to Dana. So without you, Shihan, our embed codes wouldn't be out there. So thank you so much, Shihan Woodman. So, yay. Awesome, awesome. And let's go to Bob for a couple shout-outs, and I've got a couple more.
Well, I'd like to put a shout-out to one of my JKD instructors, Mark Stewart, that put that interesting question out yesterday about center line theory and forward pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'd also like to put a giant shout-out to Patricia Sensei John Border, it being his birthday today. John, I hope you're listening. Happy birthday, my friend.
Happy birthday, Sensei John. Woohoo!
He'd love that. Class is tomorrow, so.
Oh. 50 push-ups for everybody. Oh, I just gave away how old he was. Oh, crap. Oh, my goodness. Awesome. All right, let's see. What other shout-outs do I had, like, a couple things written down, but I lost my notes. I'm trying to, like, sign into my notes. Here we are. Okay, cool. Okay. Oh, this is cool. I want to give a big shout-out to Michael Garcia. He is a food service waiter in Texas, and he's part of the wait staff of the set of restaurants called Lorenzo's on Washington. And the story is actually on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. And I want to give him a shout out and actually give him a new award that I just made up just today because of him. It's the Dynamic Dojo Awesome Citizen Award. And I want to give this award to Michael Garcia because of how he stood up to a pair of rude and bigoted people. Now, so here's the story. He was at work, and in the restaurant there was a family with a 5-year-old boy who had Down's syndrome. The mother, Kim Castillo, and her son Milo were eating, and she says that they were sitting there, and then all of a sudden she noticed that the family across from them just got up and moved to the back of the restaurant. And Kim actually thought, wow, I wonder if they're moving because of us. And, you know, she didn't think anything of it until she heard him say out loud, one of the guy out of the couple, quote unquote, special needs children need to be special somewhere else. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. I mean, out loud, you know, and it's kind of like, oh my gosh. And Michael, the waiter, he said that his personal feelings just took over, and he told this man, you know what, I'm sorry, I can't serve you. And he said that it upset him because he's a 5-year-old little boy. He's an angel. He's precious. And and it wasn't until a little bit later in the evening did Milo's mother become aware of Michael's actions. And she said, what went through my mind was that I was just so impressed and felt so good that somebody would stand up for another human being. Now, I guess what had happened also was that the family said something like, well, you know, if you don't serve us, then we're just going to leave. And Michael said, okay, good. Bye. Something like that. Okay, good. You're out of here. You know, and they left. And, you know, what is disturbing, you know, not only, you know, did these, you know, rude people think that, you know, the world revolves around them to where they could say, well, you know, if you don't serve us, we're going to leave. You're not going to have our business anymore. You know, to be that stuck up and arrogant, but to out loud say something so rude, so callous, so, you know, unthinking, unfeeling, you know,
insensitive, ridiculous.
Okay. If, you know, there's a, you know, I don't even know what, I don't even think a Darwin Award should go to these people, you know, because I don't know. I mean, when I heard this story, at first I was really angry that, you know, that these people are, you know, being so insensitive. I mean, in a way, I still am. I can't believe that people are that callous, you know. So,
but now I thought it was so cool because this guy was so in fear of losing his job and the restaurant had his back.
Yes, exactly. The management at Lorenzo's has supported Garcia. And, you know, he said, I was afraid for my job. But, you know, to stand up for something like that, even though you think your job is going to be in danger, that's an awesome citizen. That is, you know, a human being worth, you know, of recognition. Unlike those other people, you know, I mean, special needs. I mean, these other people, they have special needs, too. They need a brain.
They need a heart.
They need a heart. And maybe a slap upside the head. I don't know. So, you know, so they get to walk the hall of shame because, you know, I think that's uncalled for to complain about a special needs child. So kudos to you, Mr. Garcia, for being the awesome citizen and winning the Dynamic Dojo Awesome Citizen Award. I really wish we actually had a physical award we can send you. But, you know, we support you 100%. And if you're going to be in Houston, I'm gonna have to, you know, tell our listeners to go to one of the Lorenzo's on Washington restaurants. So go check it out, Lorenzo's on Washington. Let me click on the link here to see where exactly it is. Oh, my goodness. Look at that menu. Prime ribs, jus, zesty chicken picada, ahi tuna stuffed. You guys got to check this out. If you're in Houston, go check this out and give a shout out to Michael Garcia, wonderful waiter, awesome citizen. All right. I think that's it for my shout outs. What about you, Bob? Do you have any more shout outs?
Well, yeah, actually.
Cool.
I'd like to do a shout out to Travis Wong, son of Sifu Dove and Kerry Wong of White Lotus Kung Fu Studio.
Who we had a guest last week. Yes.
That's right. Our guest last week, Travis's new stunt reel shows that he has great talent. So if you're a fan of martial arts scripting, check it out. The video is on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page.
Yeah, it's called the Travis Wong 2013 Stunt Reel. It's a great stunt reel. Check it out. Awesome. There are more shout-outs. Oh, here's one. Yogi Diaz is announcing the Katipunan Filipino Martial Arts Hall of Fame Award Night and Banquet, and this is to recognize all Filipino martial arts instructors around the globe and to recognize people that dedicate themselves in the propagation of Filipino martial arts in their area. It says that if you know someone that teaches and practices Filipino martial arts, send their name and contact info no later than June 15th, 2013, so that the organization has time to invite them to the award night and Hall of Fame banquet. The location is to be announced, but apparently it's going to be in the Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Florida area. And you want to send your nominations to Gatpuno, Gatpuno at AOL.com, or you can call cell phone 305-788-4403. So check that out if you want to nominate any Filipino martial arts instructors for the Katipunan Filipino Martial Arts Hall of Fame Award Night and Banquet. That's under Yogi Diaz. He posted that on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. Yay.
Very cool.
Awesome. And let's see, what else? I'm looking. I'm looking for other announcements. Let's see, here's something from George Laska. He writes, dear friends, Today, I will give you the following information. With the end of April 2013, the World Martial Arts Committee and the International Budo Sports Federation and the World Humbu Dojo opens. Oh, I get it now. Sorry, George, I'm not reading right. But at the end of April 2013, the World Martial Arts Committee and the International Budo Sports Federation will open their World Humbu Dojo. They're going to have I'm assuming this means square meters, 900 square meter training rooms, meeting rooms, and offices. They're planning to have an internet cafe and martial arts shops. Sounds like a huge Humbu Dojo.
Sounds
so
awesome.
I know. So thank you for posting that, Hanchi George Laska. He's the president of the International Budo Sport Federation and the world president of the World Martial Arts Committee. Oh, my goodness. That's great. That's awesome. All right. Well, I think that's it for my shout-outs. Is that it for you, Bob?
That's it for me.
All right. Well, let's move on to the health news clips. I want to talk a little bit about the benefits of hot peppers. or actually capsaicin, the active ingredient that makes that helps in making peppers as hot and spicy as they are. Now, you know, I'm sure all of us know that, you know, peppers are good for colds and pain relief. But apparently studies have shown that there's more to it than just pain relief for arthritis and relieving colds and congestion. Now, there's this guy. His name is Ted Barris. He's just an ordinary guy from Pullman, Washington, which is on the border between Washington State, where I'm at, and Idaho. And he says he calls himself an idiot, more likely a fire-breathing idiot. He doesn't actually breathe fire, though. But check this out. His main hobby is sampling extremely hot peppers. His latest sampling is the Trinidad Moruga Scorpion, a pepper that was recently named the world's hottest by the researchers at New Mexico State University's Chili Pepper Institute. Wow, really? I didn't know there was a Chili Pepper Institute. I had no idea. Oh, my gosh. And what he does is he takes peppers and stuff like that, and he actually posts his trying these, like, incredibly, incredibly hot peppers on YouTube. Okay, so I put a copy of this story on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, so you're going to have to click it and check this guy out, because he's actually, like, I think he's trying the Trinidad Moruga Scorpion pepper on the particular video on the link. But anyway... he says that he just kind of passes by the jalapenos and the habaneros. They're not hot enough for him. He only goes for the super hots and the nuclears, as he calls them. The Trinidad Moruga Scorpion pepper, check this out, has a hit of an average of more than 1.2 million Scoville heat units, making it 1,000 times hotter than the jalapeno. Now, an average jalapeno has about 5,000 units. 1.2 million Scoville heat units. That's crazy. I think you'd need a waiver to eat something like that, you think?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But anyhow, now he does this because he's a big believer in the health benefits. I mean, despite the pain, he says that it lasts about 20 minutes eating this pepper. He does say, though, that the 40-minute period of bliss that follows is worth the pain. Now, you know, as we all know, certain types of foods, you know, in this case peppers, will cause a massive endorphin rush. And he says that his body gets tingly, his arms and hands start to go numb, and he gets euphoric. It feels good. And these endorphins are released, as we know, in response to stress and pain. And these endorphins, you know, kind of not trick the brain, but they allow the brain to reduce the perception of pain, which is why you know, many people use creams and stuff that have capsaicin in it for things like arthritis and other joint disorders such as, what's another joint disorder? I said arthritis, gout.
Tendinitis,
gout. My father had gout and used the capsaicin and stuff like that, and that worked. And so, you know, we know that it's great for pain, all sorts of arthritis pain, but it's also good for dermatitis, dermatologic conditions and neuropathic pain. And, you know, being on the receiving end of neuropathy, that hurts. I almost said a bad word. I was going to say that junk hurts, but you know, yeah. If I would have known that capsaicin would have helped, I probably would have taken it. So anyhow, capsaicin is used by many people with psoriasis, and it decreases the itching and the inflammation. I didn't know that. Did any of you guys?
No, not at all.
Wow, I mean that's pretty amazing. And the study also shows that capsaicin also helps with appetite suppression. Now, you know, there isn't any solid data that determines, you know, what role the capsaicin plays in weight loss, but the studies suggest that capsaicin can help with appetite suppression. Personally, I don't feel that to be the case because I eat peppers to increase my appetite. It's like an appetizer for me. So I don't know. And also, and here's a big one. This is what amazed me. Studies have also suggested, although there isn't any solid data yet, these are just preliminary findings, these studies have suggested that capsaicin may also play a part in helping kill off prostate cancer cells. Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. These studies, this is a quote by Ashwin Mehta. He's the director of integrative medicine at the University of Miami's Miller School of Medicine. He says that in test tubes, researchers found a correlation between increased cell death and capsaicin. So, you know, much luck to researchers out there to see about finding, you know, other treatments for cancers using the natural ingredient of capsaicin. That'd be pretty cool. So anyway, that's just a few of the other cool benefits that capsaicin in peppers has. For the full write-up, please go to the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page and click on the link, read the full write-up, and you'll also see a video of Mr. Ted Barris eating Trinidad Moruga scorpion pepper, 1.2 million Scoville heat units. Oh, man. Good luck to you, Ted. Whew. My eyes are watering just thinking about it.
Yeah. Good luck to him and his colon.
Oh, yeah. All right. Man. All right. Well, that's it for my health news. Let's move on to Bob's
Weird News.
Would All you right. believe that an entrepreneurial type was actually jailed? Unbelievable when I read this story.
Huh.
Southwestern Pennsylvania, a woman was jailed on charges that she was flagging down motorists and offering to take her clothes off for cash in the middle of an intersection. Online records don't list an attorney for 35-year-old Jackie Hatter of Uniontown, Pennsylvania. She remained jailed Wednesday, unable to post the $25,000 bond. The Herald Standard of Uniontown reports Hatter was arrested about 8:40 a.m. Well, people are going to work, okay? I apologize. No, this is a Sunday. 8:40 a.m. on a Sunday and charged with disorderly conduct and marijuana possession. Police say they were told she was stopping cars to offer a striptease at an intersection in the city about 40 miles south of Pittsburgh. Police say Hatter was mumbling incoherently and fighting with officers. A preliminary hearing on the charges has yet to be scheduled.
Wow.
See, she was wasn't only offering the strip tease, she was also carrying pot with her as well.
I know. You know, Darwin Award.
Yes. another Darwin moment.
Darwin Award. Oh, my gosh. Gee whiz.
Evolution just hasn't reached these people yet.
It only gone so far as the opposing thumb with some people, not any farther. I don't know.
That's right. Their knuckles are still dragging, I'm telling you.
Gosh. Oh, man.
So, here is my weird laws for the week. And these
weird
are all
laws.
Out of Georgia.
This is from where? From
Georgia.
Georgia. Weird news from Georgia. Okay.
And now, this one's just a quirky one. In Ackworth, Georgia, all citizens must own a rake. God knows why.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what? If the rake police come by your backyard, they look.
They
see
you in an apartment.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah.
Exactly. They don't specify. Maybe there's no apartments in Ackworth. That's all housing. I don't know. And I don't know how they came across this one. And like you and I have said in the past many weeks, they must have been a problem for them to come up with laws.
Yeah.
In Columbus, Georgia, it is illegal to sit on one's porch in an indecent position. This must have been a real problem, right? What does that mean? You sit there on all fours or with your legs behind your head or...
Well, you know, when people say, you know, Georgia, I think about those, you know, those nice houses with the big sweeping verandas where you can sit out on your big porch, you know, in your rocking chair. And I want to know what happened to have this law come into fruition.
That's right. And I think there were cousins involved, and I think there were no clothes involved.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
It is illegal to spread false rumor.
You know, that should be a law.
It should be. Everywhere, that should be a law.
It should be a law. So, yeah, okay, I like that. I like that.
This one, I don't get this one. It's illegal to change the clothes on a storefront mannequin without the shades drawn.
Oh, Georgia.
The next one I agree with because it drives me nuts when people eat chicken with a knife and fork.
Uh-huh.
Or when they eat pizza with a knife or fork, I want to reach over and slap them. I swear. It is actually a law where it's illegal to eat chicken with a fork.
Oh, well, God bless them. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm serious.
Now, here's another one that sort of goes into last week, one of the laws last week.
Uh-huh.
It is illegal to fart at a state fair.
Well, that sucks.
Specifically at a state fair. Everywhere else is okay.
I want to know how they enforce that law.
That's right. Like I said last week, I just blame it on anybody else anyway. It's like I'll blame it on a dog. I don't care.
Are you one of those mean people that like does the cover thing in bed? With
no, you know what? I have never done that. I swear to God, I have never done that. I have told my wife that it's cold, roll up the windows. But I've never done the cover thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. But if I do it now, I can say, call up Rusty, it was her idea.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, That really, it's illegal to fart at a state fair. That's awesome. Well, that was Bob's weird news.
Weird news.
I love that segment. All right. Well, let's move on real quick to the trivia question of the week. So, listeners, this is the time where you better get on that phone, because if you want to win some bragging rights and to possibly get a chance to have some fun with me and Sifu Bob as a guest co-host on the Dynamic Dojo radio show, you want to be the first caller with the first correct answer to this week's trivia question. So, with that said, let's all get to the trivia question. Now I got to find it. Here we go. Okay, here we go. Choi Young Yue is the birth name of what well-known karate great? I'll say that again. Choi Young Yue, that's E-U-E-I, Choi Young Yue, is the birth name of what well-known karate great? First correct answer at 347-677-0699 gets to win bragging rights and a chance to be a guest co-host with me and Sifu Robert. Woohoo!
Now, Sifu, can you spell the entire name so our listeners get the spelling correctly?
You bet. Everyone pull out your pens. It's Choi, C-H-O-I, Yeong, Y-E-O-N-G, and then E-U-E-I. Choi Young Yue. I think I said it right. And that's the birth name of what well-known karate great? So, 347-677-0699. If you're the first correct answer, call in, please. And win some bragging rights. So, with that said, let's go ahead and take a really, really quick PSA break. And then we'll be right back to start our discussion on beginners' views on martial arts. We'll be right back.
The new year is a time when many of us resolve to lose weight and eat healthier. But for people who are either overweight or obese, getting to a healthy weight and staying there can require a major lifestyle change. ARC Director Dr. Carolyn Clancy is here to talk about this issue. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Clancy. First, can you give us an idea of how big a problem this is?
This is one of the most serious problems we face. In the United States, obesity among adults doubled between 1980 and 2004. Today, 2 out of 3 adults are considered to be overweight, and about 27% of Americans over the age of 20 are obese. Even more troubling, 17% of all children in the United States are overweight.
How do you define being overweight or obese?
Overweight and obesity are labels for ranges of weight that are greater than what is generally considered to be healthy for a given height. For adults, overweight and obesity ranges are determined by using weight and height to calculate a number called the body mass index, or BMI. An adult who has a BMI between 25 and 29.9 is considered to be overweight. An adult with a BMI of 30 or higher is considered to be obese.
What are some of the risks involved with being overweight or obese?
Studies have found that being obese or overweight increases your risk of developing serious chronic illnesses, such as heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, and several types of cancer. Osteoarthritis, gallbladder disease, sleep apnea, respiratory impairment, and diminished mobility are also associated with obesity.
What would you recommend to the growing numbers of obese individuals who are unable to lose weight on their own?
The good news is that dropping even as little as 5 to 7% of body weight can make you feel better and improve your health. A Blue Ribbon Task Force shows that people can change their behavior through intensive counseling on diet and exercise. This, in turn, can produce modest weight loss for a year or more. People are also increasingly turning to surgery to lose weight. This is a very serious decision, and it's important to choose a surgeon who has a lot of experience.
Dr. Clancy, do you have any advice for parents with children who are struggling with their weight?
A new report from my agency, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, has found that, along with increasing exercise and eating healthier, behavior management programs also help obese children and teens lose weight or prevent weight gain. The bottom line is that there are options for all family members. The best approach is for you to talk to your doctor to get all the information you need to help you decide what is best for you and your family. I'm Dr. Carolyn Clancy, and that's my advice for navigating the healthcare system.
For more information on weight management and other health-related stories and topics, go to healthcare411.ahrq.gov.
And now, on with the show.
All righty, and we are back. I'm Rashida DeJesus, and I'm joined with Cecil Robert Deal and Patricia Smith, our guest co-host. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. That's 347-677-0699. And we are going to start our forum discussion about the beginner's perspectives in martial arts. Now, as a martial art teacher, and I'm sure you can relate with this too, Sifu Bob, our outlooks on the martial arts is a tad different than beginners.
Yeah.
A tad different. But, you know, this is why I wanted to have a discussion like that. We want to hear from anyone out there listening, feel free to call in 347-677-0699, what your views or expectations, outlooks, what have you, on martial arts are. If you're a beginner, or even if you've been studying for a while, or even if you're a teacher, you know, we'd like to hear what your recollection of your views on martial arts were when you were a beginner. So 347-677-0699. So Bob, what about you? I mean, you know, you've been doing martial arts now for going on 40 years. You know, what really attracted you to martial arts, and what was your views when you first started getting into martial arts, when you first got into it?
I don't know, Cecil, because I'm trying to do the math. You just said I've been around for 40 years, but, you know, I'm only 23.
Right.
You know, expectations of the martial arts run the entire gambit.
Mm-hmm.
From somebody that's getting bullied, you know, I wanted to when I came up, my expectations were, you know, I wanted to learn some skills, some fighting skills and self-defense, you know, and I ran the gamut styles through the years. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Kung Fu, Karate, hard, soft, linear, angular, stick. My expectations were as what I believe is typical, just go in, work hard, and train.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, and you've experienced this with your wushu training. You saw this beautiful butterfly kick and says, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Different expectations than I had, because I wasn't getting my fat ass off the ground. That's just the way it was.
Right. Oh my goodness, yeah. And what about you, Patricia? I mean, you have about 7 months of experience under Sensei John Border.
Yes.
And we really love to hear your views on your training so far as a beginner, and what your initial thoughts were going into the class and stuff like that. So what were your initial thoughts going into classes?
Well, to be honest, when I first started, I wasn't looking for the more traditional martial arts. I wasn't looking to get involved in taekwondo or karate or any of the more traditional dojos out there.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for self-defense is what
mm-hmm.
I really wanted to do. And unfortunately, in our area, there's not a whole lot of places that do that. It's mostly
mm-hmm.
the very traditional dojos. So when I found Sensei Borders school, I was actually really surprised that there's anyone doing that around here. And to be honest, my first expectation was not that it would be this much fun. I never expected it. You know, I expected it to be a chore. Like, I hate working out. I should put this out right now. I hate working out. I hate exercising. I run, and I hate every single solitary second of it.
Oh.
I do it because I have to. You know, I do it to stay in shape and all of that. But I don't enjoy it. I'm not really into exercise that much. So I thought it would be something that I would do because I had to do it.
Right.
I wouldn't really like it. And I was shocked at how much I enjoy it. I love it. Absolutely love it. So
wow.
That kind of shocked me. I didn't really expect it to be something that I would enjoy that much. But it's interesting because there's a lot of stuff going on for me in, you know, being a woman in the martial arts. mm-hmm. in an area where there's not a whole lot of women. I mean, Albany is a small town still, mm-hmm. so it's not really a huge presence. There are women doing it, of course, but not that many. So being a woman, being, you know, entering it when I'm 40, and all these people that I'm in class with have been doing it for 20 years, you know, uh-huh. there's people half my age who have black belts. So mm-hmm. That's a little intimidating sometimes to
right.
get into it as a newcomer at this age. And, you know, I think that most people probably enter it with these sort of preconceptions that we get from movies and from
exactly.
From watching Chuck Norris and watching all these martial arts guys in the movies. And some of it does hold up. Some of it is somewhat similar. It's a little bit of carryover, but it's a little surprising how little of it is accurate. There's a lot of misconceptions out there about what martial arts is, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I wonder, you know, I mean, being in it for so long, sometimes, you know, I'd hate to say that maybe I'm jaded or anything, but it's sometimes it's hard for me to go back and remember, you know, what it was like. I mean, I do remember, mm-hmm. but sometimes it's hard for me to go back and in a sense relive it and really understand what those, you know, first few months were for me. I mean, I do remember being attracted to martial arts specifically because of the old Kung Fu TV series. the original one from the 70s, right? With, you know, mm-hmm. David Carradine and stuff. And, you know, and I thought, wow, I want to do that. You know, I want to do Kung mm-hmm. Fu. Now, of course, there wasn't any Kung Fu that I knew of in the Seattle area at the time. There was, but I just, you know, didn't have the resources to find, you know, what it was. I mean, I was only like 6. And, but I saw that and I thought, but that's cool. I want to learn to kick like that. I want to, you know, and I kind of want to be a superhero and, you know, beat people up. And that's really what my expectation was. Mm-hmm. You know, but to beat people up for the greater good, you know, like Kwai Chang Kane did in the Kung Fu TV series. And then I got into my first class. It was karate, Botokukan karate. And I immediately fell in love with it because, you know, I was young and really didn't know the difference between the arts. I didn't know karate from Kung Fu, mm-hmm. you know. I just, you know, knew that it was something that was similar to what I saw on TV. But you're right, I didn't expect it to be that much fun. You know, mm-hmm. I had expected it to be a class, you know, like going to school.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, like something that you have to do. Well, I have to go to school. I have to do my homework, you know, and that's what I thought it was. But I found it was just so, you know, so much fun. Definitely didn't expect that at all. So that blew me out of the water. And, you know, I'd be interested in hearing what some of our listeners, you know, might think if they've had similar experiences or, you know, or what have you. We've got about 3 people that have logged in to the chat board. We'd love to hear from you. However, if you're too shy to call in, the chat board is right below the show marquee on Blog Talk Radio. All you have to do is scroll down a little bit, and there's a little flash chat board, live chat down there. We've got guest number 2464, guest number 2481, guest number 2521. We had a bunch more earlier, and I guess they logged out. But, you know, if you have any questions or want to add, just type right in there if you don't want to call. Just type in the chat board, and we'll make sure that your opinion gets heard, because I'd really like to hear about that. Now, in your training so far, Patricia, I mean, what exactly are you studying over there at Sensei John School? This is going to be a shameless plug for your school, by the way.
I'm more than happy. I love plugging the school. So
good. Let's plug your school.
Well, it's the Modern Self-Defense Academy, and it's right in Albany on Central Avenue, which is the main drag through town. Mm-hmm. And it's like I said, it's not a traditional dojo. I mean, we don't wear uniforms. We don't do belts. We don't, you know, do that kind of stuff. It's really centered around the idea of practical self-defense skills.
Cool.
You know, things that you can actually use if you wind up in trouble in a fight to defend yourself and to keep yourself from getting hurt and from getting killed. So it's now, Sensei Border has a background in multiple arts and black belts in multiple arts. Primarily what the system is based on is comes out of jiu-jitsu, but there's a lot of, especially small circle jiu-jitsu.
Oh, cool.
That was one of his major arts. But there are elements of other arts thrown in, which is, the other thing I love about it is that if there's something from another art that makes sense for the system and that would work, we use it.
Good.
So we're not strictly karate people or strictly jiu-jitsu or strictly kung fu or any of that. If there's something from another art that we could use, we'll take it and use it. It's just, it's what works. It's
awesome.
That's what matters. We're doing a lot of women's self-defense classes too, which is really fun because then you get to see the beginner perspective every single time.
Yes.
These are all people who are new to martial arts, new to self-defense, new to any of this stuff. Mm. And so you get to really learn. I mean, even after 7 months, you start to forget what it's like to be absolutely brand spanking new at something.
Mm-hmm.
And I know after 20 years and 30 years, people who have been in it and who have black belts and are at that level tend to forget. And we all do. It's just what happens when time goes by. No one keeps those memories fresh. So it's really cool to be able to see what it's like to learn this stuff at that level and to sort of be reminded, get a refresher that this is what it's like to start out new, and this is what it's like to be brand new to something like this. And I think it keeps us fresh. I think it keeps us always learning and always teaching. So it's a lot of fun. That's
right.
That's really what we do down there. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I think that one of the reasons why, longtime martial artists tend to, quote-unquote, forget about what it's like to be a beginner is that, as time goes and you're experiencing it too, as time goes on, our goals change and our expectations of how we're going to reach those, particular goals and change.
Mm-hmm.
And, and when we're focusing on, this new mindset or these new goals or whatever, then it is tough to, to remember sometimes where you
mm-hmm.
were. I'm not saying that anyone forgets where they've been. No,
mm-hmm.
Any good teacher knows that you have to remember where you've been. But I've noticed just in my own students, from the time that they're beginners, that everything changes. Their goals change, their approach to training changes, or even their focal interest
mm-hmm.
in the art changes. Someone might come in as a beginner wanting, to do jump kicks because, they see it on TV, they watch The Matrix, or, they watch parkour, and they want to do the same stuff that, Damian Walters does, just incredible gymnastics and stuff. And then they come in, and then they go, oh, wait, this is work, and this is hard, and I'm going to get through it. So now it's different. Now it's not so much I want to do all these acrobatics. It's, at least with one student of mine, he had changed his mode of training to, I'm going to prepare my body and take care of my body in a way that will allow me to do this kind of training.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, so now he's not like result oriented anymore. He changed his focal point to the process orientation. So I was like,
absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. And I think, I think all beginners to a certain extent go through that. But yeah, we'd like to hear from people. 347-677-0699. I think everyone's out to lunch. Not like, out to lunch crazy, but I think everyone's actually having lunch. But no.
I was going to say that sounds awful personal.
I didn't mean it like that. But we still have the three people on chat over here. Guest number 2464, 2481, 2521. We'd love to hear from you, Even just say hi on the chat board. Just scroll right down to the bottom there. I don't know if you can do that from the Facebook thing, because I think from the Facebook link, it just down at the bottom under the link, it says, listen to it now. And I don't think it shows up if you hit it.
Mm.
See, now I want to try it. Let's I'm curious now. How do I do that?
Well, I know it doesn't from mobile.
Oh, yeah, I don't think...
You can't do it for mobile.
Yeah, I don't think it would from a phone, but I'm going to click on it and see what happens, because it says listen now, and I'm hoping it doesn't, like, interfere with the broadcast here, but let's find out. Let's see. No, what it does is it takes you right to the link on Blog Talk Radio and then the chat board down below. But now it's starting to, like, play, and now I'm confused because I'm hearing two different things. So I'm going to turn that off.
Good idea.
All right. Okay. So let's go to Bob. I wanted to ask you a question about this. Now, when you were teaching, then this is kind of a weird question, and I'm posing this question to any and all martial arts teachers out there. What is it? Well, I mean, what stuff do you guys take into consideration as teachers in order to make a beginner's curriculum for your students? Now, I know that, you know, like let's say karate. You know, I'm just, you know, throwing karate out there as an example, because I am a karate practitioner also. You know, we've known that you have to teach this, this, and this, and this to any beginner first.
Right.
But, you know, if you apply, you know, this cut-in-stone curriculum, you know, after a few years of teaching it, you probably realize that, you know, maybe the cut-in-stone curriculum and the sequence that you teach stuff for beginners probably doesn't work for everybody. That kind of thing. So my open question
is, it doesn't, because you absorb what is useful, discard what is useless, like Bruce Lee said, because it doesn't all work for everybody. But mm-hmm. it was handed down to you a certain way, and the curriculum has been developed by your Soki or his Soki or his Soki. So this is the way it's done. But it's always an evolutionary process, especially within the JKD family. It was an evolutionary process for years because it wouldn't all work for everybody, but everybody learned the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We had to, unless they were taking privates, that was the way it was done. They learned the same way. They were taught the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and for the most part, when I was doing karate, it was pretty much the same. You know, we had to learn horse dance first. We had to learn seikenzuki first. We had to, you know, and all that, you know, and do the quote unquote beginner stuff.
Right.
And we all progressed. There was nothing wrong with it. However, what I thought was really cool was one of my senseis. I was actually being taught by a gentleman named Sensei Peter Gurney, and he had, you know, really great drills that he would put in to allow us to understand the movements a lot better and to combat boredom. You know, he put in Tai Chi, different ways of doing stance work and stuff like that. But also his teacher, Sensei Robert Long, he made up these wonderful drills based on the basics and kind of came away from the cut in stone way of teaching karate, at least on what we would call this side of the water. It's kind of a joke with the Botokukan karate people here in the Puget Sound. We say this side of the water, meaning, you know, Seattle, and then the other side of the water, meaning like another city called Bremerton across the sound, that kind of thing. And the two areas were different in how we taught. So there was the Seattle way, and then there was the Bremerton Port Orchard way, that kind of thing. Still got everything across as a style. Everyone got the same requirements. But, you know, the methodology was a bit different. And it turned out that, you know, our people sparred a bit different than the people on the other side. Not, you know, not any better. We weren't any better, you know. We were just different. And, you know, that's why I'm asking teachers, you know, have you changed the way you were taught as a beginner in order to meet the needs of your students? So, we've got a question on the chat board from John Tobison. I hope I said your name right, John. And this question is actually for you, Patricia.
Okay.
John T-O-B-I-S-O-N, do you know him?
Yes,
anyway.
He's one of the students. At...
Oh, cool. So he asks, yeah. Trish, what are the special challenges of being a woman as a beginner, given that most of martial arts students are still men? What do you think the instructors or fellow students could do differently? Is it okay the way it is?
When he says, is it okay the way it is, as far as my own experience, I can't speak for what other schools are doing or even just what other disciplines are doing because I've never trained. I've never trained in Kung Fu or Karate or any of the other arts. I can speak generally in my experience as a woman starting out. And I have to say that one of the things that really kind of sticks out for me is the idea, sort of the presumption that a lot of, I don't know if it's whether this, the instructors make or whether it's something inherent in the discipline, that things are done a certain way because you're a man. It's something that's hard to think about. If you're inside of it, if you're a man teaching men, it's sometimes difficult to think about the perspective outside. You can't think like a woman if you're not a woman. It just doesn't happen, and that's fine. And that's, you can't expect someone to do that. But there have been times where I've been taught moves where it's sometimes they're based on an assumption that's really true only for men. For example, I'll tell you an example in our women's self-defense class.
Okay.
One of the things that we do is we teach a wrist release for the women. Mm-hmm. And we have people that will say, well, no one's going to grab your wrist on the street. Who's going to grab your wrist? That's not what people do. Well, if you're a guy, no one's going to grab your wrist. I mean, that's a perspective that a guy will have. Ask any man on the street, they're going to say, who's going to grab my wrist? If someone's attacking me, they're not going to grab me by the wrist. They'll punch me. They'll cold cock me in the face. So why would I need this? But if you're a woman, that's what a man is going to do. He's trying to attack you. So it's something that can be difficult to think about if you're not coming from the perspective, which is why I love it when people are willing to have these conversations and willing to say, hey, you know what, I'm a guy, you're a woman, or I'm a woman, you're a guy. What do you think about what we're doing? Does it make sense for you as a woman? Does it make sense for you as a guy? Is this something that you're going to really use? Something else that I was talking to some of the women in our self-defense classes is sort of the more psychological effects of training and of training for these kinds of attacks. And it's something that's hard to sort of put into words a lot of the time. If you're not a woman, you don't really think about this stuff. If you're a woman, you think about this stuff all the time.
Right.
And it's the idea that, if we're getting attacked, we're always sort of conscious of where it could go. We're always sort of hyper-vigilant about what could possibly happen. There's no casual attack for a woman. There's no some guy's just going to punch you. There's always this sort of hyper-vigilance about where it could go and what could possibly happen. So it's something that I try and think about when I'm training, and I don't think about it, I'm not going to obsess about it, but it's fun to have these conversations with people because it's good to have these perspectives sort of opened up to you. And I love talking to guys about this stuff because they have a completely different perspective than I do about training. Mm-hmm. For me, training isn't about having fun all the time. It's about, seriously, I might need to use this stuff at some point.
Exactly.
There's nothing really specifically that I would change, but I really encourage people to keep having conversations about this stuff because there's stuff that I've learned from the guys in the class and from the other women in the class that I really just hadn't thought about. And I know it's happened vice versa. People said, I really didn't think about that. I'm not a woman. I don't go through this stuff. So, as long as the conversation is happening, as long as we're willing to keep talking about this stuff and, keep an open mind about this, then...
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all, really benefit from having these conversations.
I agree.
Well, I totally agree. Now, Patricia, I have a question for you because the number one rule, the number one thing in self-defense is know your surroundings.
Absolutely.
Awareness
is
number one.
Right.
Know where you are. Know where you're going. Don't look like a victim. Be aware of who's around you. Have you noticed that you started with Sensei Porter 7 months ago? Has your awareness picked up? Have you noticed people that you may not have noticed 8 months ago?
Well, you know, I love that you asked me that, Sifu Bob, because let me tell you a story. I have noticed that, and at the same time, now, I'm from New York City. I'm living in Albany now, but I'm from Queens. I was born and raised in Flushing, Queens. And so I like to think that I have a little more awareness of this stuff. Now, I'd like to think that it was sort of, you know, smacked into me to always be aware of who I am. You know, here on the subway, you can't have your head in the clouds. You got to really be aware of who's around you and what they're doing and that sort of thing. So my New York City pride likes to think that I'm pretty aware already before I even started training with Sensei Border. Then when I started training with him and then we started doing the women's self-defense classes, I like to think that I became more aware. However, and I think I am. I think I do have more awareness and have that more, it's more conscious for me than something that I don't think about. You know, it's more in the forefront of my thoughts. If I'm in the mall parking lot or, you know, somewhere where it's risky or a parking garage, I'd like to think that I'm more aware of this stuff. However, I was coming out of a supermarket, it was afternoon or evening, early evening, and it was getting dark, and just one of those supermarkets around here, and I wasn't texting, so that's good. Yay, that's one mark in my favor. I wasn't texting like most people do, walking down the street, not paying attention. I was just walking. But I was so oblivious at that point. I so was not paying attention to what was going on that I almost walked right into a guy who was just coming up on my side. He wasn't in my blind spot, but he kind of was off to the side a bit. And I was just not paying any attention. I was just focusing on where I was going, and all of a sudden there's a guy there. Mm-hmm. And I was probably safe. I was probably fine, but after it happened, I kind of looked around. I noticed, yeah, it's kind of an empty parking lot. There's really not a whole lot of people around. If he wanted to, mm-hmm. he might have been able to try something. He might have been able to pull me into a van or something like that. So although, yes, I absolutely do think that my training has been helping to make me more aware, I still need to improve. I still need to be better. And it just killed me that happened. As for like 2 days afterward, I'm going, what the heck? I know better. Mm-hmm. What am I doing? So it helps, and you're right, Sifu Bob, it absolutely is the cornerstone of what we do, is the awareness piece. That's the first thing that we cover in the women's self-defense classes, is that you have to be aware of what's going on around you, and so many people don't do it. Did mm-hmm. you hear about the woman who walked off the cliff in Alaska?
No.
She was texting, and she went to throw a cigarette butt away, and she wasn't paying attention to where she was walking. She was hiking up in the middle of Alaska, and she had her phone out and was texting, and she went to throw her cigarette over a cliff, and she wasn't paying attention. Whoop, fell down the cliff.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
She wound up being okay. She was okay. They had to come and, like, rescue her with a chopper and all this stuff. But, yeah,
oh,
if people
man.
Walk out in front of cars, our Sensei Border is always talking about when he drives from work, he works in Schenectady, which is a fairly big city, and he's driving to and from work, and people will walk out into the street texting mm-hmm. on their phones. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And the woman who walked in the fountain.
Yeah.
Remember that? Like a year
yeah.
or two ago, the fountain video.
Yeah.
She walked right into a fountain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's absolutely a huge part of what we do. And
well,
I think I'm better.
And that's one of Sifu's Rusty's pet peeves about people texting and walking across the street at the same time.
Yeah. I hate it when people walk across the street while they're texting because they tend to not cross from corner to corner in the crosswalk. They'll walk halfway into the crosswalk and then start walking diagonally down the street, like to get a head start on the sidewalk while they're texting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm turning right and I can't because they're walking down the middle of the street where my car is supposed to be. And I'm like, what are you doing? You have no idea. And then if I honk, they get mad and then I get flipped the bird, you know, learn how to drive. It's like, well, learn how to walk.
Yeah, it's your fault. It's your fault.
Exactly. It's like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, but I do want to talk more about the awareness factor mm-hmm. with beginners and between men and women. But we have a caller, and
yay.
Hey, you know, this caller is from your end of town, Bob. So area code 818. Area code 818. Go ahead. You're on Dynamic Dojo.
I hope he turned his computer down.
Hey.
So,
what's up?
Actually, since we were talking about awareness, I just kind of want to bounce off that. Something that we do in our class and that our sensei constantly talks about is doing awareness training, just like constantly where you're going. Think about where people might be. Think about the dark shadows. You know, think about if you're alone. You know, it's just like if you're if you if you always constantly think about these things, you're more ready, I think, and more prepared for what might come. And a lot of the times things won't happen, but it is that one time that you will be more prepared.
Right. For it. Right.
Well,
now tell
people,
us a little bit about,
are we
yeah.
supposed to know who our callers are? Are we supposed to get a name of our callers?
I was just going to get there. I was just going to get
Would
there.
You
tell
get
us.
That, please?
All right. So I guess our listeners want to know who you are, buddy.
I am Brandon Deal, coming out of Burbank, California.
Yeah, this is Sifu Bob's son. And wonderful, wonderful martial artist. And I want to plug your sensei also. So tell us a little bit about your sensei.
My sensei, his name is Sensei Scott Jacoby,
mm-hmm.
and he is a sensei under Kang Shuan Do, and
yes.
he teaches out of Sherman Oaks, and he's been teaching for about 10 years, 10 years under Kang Shuan Do, which
mm-hmm.
of that I've been involved in about 5 years of it. But
awesome.
the thing I really love about him is he is realistic about what is going to happen. He knows that things are never what you expect them to be, or what, like, if you do a combination in sparring, yeah, that's fine. But if you're thinking about, you know, what you're going to be doing on the street, it is never the way you expect it to turn out to be.
Exactly.
And he always talks about that, and always is about, you know, following up, because 50 more percent of your punches are going to graze off, or, you know, just in the mix, things fly. And he's very realistic in that aspect.
That's very cool.
Well,
now,
Brandon, tell us what your expectations were when you met Sensei Scott when you were in the sixth grade.
Well, I think I had the same expectation as I think a lot of different kids do. You know, you go into martial arts to learn how to kick somebody's butt.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I learned most in martial arts is not only that, and if you need to go there, you can, but it's you learn when not to go there. That I think is the most important part about it, is knowing that line where to just back off, or where you need to go in and handle the situation.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Now,
go ahead, Sifu.
Oh, I was just going to ask him what he remembers the first thing he learned as a beginner his first day, but go ahead. We'll get to that in a sec.
No, go ahead. Ask him that. That's a great question.
Yeah, yeah. So, Brandon, do you remember your first day? I mean, what, you know, what did Sensei Scott, like, throw out there the very first day?
Yeah, I remember my first day pretty vividly. I went there, and I wanted to be respectful. I asked him if I could participate in the class, and he said okay. And so I think I just learned the very basics first. The senpai of the class took me aside and just taught me basic straight punches, basic reverse punches. And I think we did that for the whole class period for about 2 hours. So,
right on.
Which is still, I mean, I learned that the first day, but that's, you know, learning all the basic fundamentals first before you get more advanced is very important. So.
Agreed. In fact, it's said that in some styles of kung fu, that they put you in mabu, the horse stance, and you practice straight punches for upwards of like a month to 6 months, and it's to test your willingness to learn. It's to test your tenacity.
Yeah.
And if you're still doing those horse stances in the corner, doing like a bajillion punches after 6 months, that's when the sifu actually comes up to you and teaches you something. And, wow, where's the fire? That's quite the siren there.
That's on our side.
Wow, that's loud. And are you guys hearing that as loud as I am? It's like my headset blew up. That was that was crazy. Wow, where's the fire? But
every time a fire truck passes by, I always cover up my headset. You can still hear it.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
you got a great headset there. But you know, I'm a firm believer in the basics first and foremost. Period. I'm a big believer in it. As long as the student understands that there's an importance for the fundamentals, right? Now, a lot of people will quit if they think that's all there is, right? And in a lot of Asian cultures, it's already understood. You go to a kung fu school, you go to a karate school, you're doing like kibadachi, seikenzuki, or mabu, and walks and stuff like that. And they know that they have to work for the privilege of learning. But as one guest had mentioned a few weeks ago, the Western culture and the Asian culture, are different enough to where it can somehow make it hard for a Western beginner sometimes, mm-hmm. because we're used to, as Westerners, maybe 1 to 3 weeks to get good at fundamentals, as opposed to, committing to 1 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular quote came from Sifu Kimberly Ivey, was talking about, learning basics and Tai Chi and stuff. And, in a way, I think it's kind of true that, that many beginners, depending on their expectations, go into an art knowing that they're going to learn the basics, but probably, I don't know, I'll have to ask other beginners, but not really expecting that the basics are going to take upwards of 1, 2, 3, or 4 years to master before, quote-unquote learning anything. And now, do any of you find that might be a mindset that some beginners might have when they first come into a martial art?
That's an absolute mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen and heard it, in talking to other people who've been involved in more traditional dojos. They get very frustrated because they feel like they should be getting – it's almost like they enter with a certain time frame. And it's funny because I want to ask them, where did you get this idea? You've never done this before. You have no idea how long it's going to take you to master this or to get competent at it or to get whatever level you need to be. Why did you think it would be 6 months or 8 months or four or whatever it happened to be?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be frustrating when you're working on the same fundamentals over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But the trick for me is to find ways to make that interesting, to make it fun.
Exactly.
And if it's a challenge, which it is because obviously I haven't mastered it, I'm still working on it, as long as it's a challenge, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you don't get in that mindset of expecting that you should be done or you should be to a certain point by a certain time, you take that pressure off of yourself. It's really funny. I just thought of this, but when I first started, when I was in the first couple months, I was so frustrated because there's all these, literally every other student is a black belt at the school in some art form. Not necessarily in jiu-jitsu, but in kung fu or taekwondo or... And so it felt it's a little depressing at first because mm-hmm. I was really awful. I'm still not saying I'm great now, but I just started, so I didn't know what I was doing. And I would go home after every class and I'd think, I'm horrible compared to these people. It's just absolutely awful. And they would, of course, everyone would say, no, you're fine. You're advancing at a good pace. You're doing well. Just keep at it. You're a beginner. But, you hear that stuff, but you don't really, mm-hmm. in your head you hear it, but you don't really believe it. You feel like, I should be as good as these people who've been doing it for 30 years after a month, because I'm crazy like that. So it came to me, and I had this revelation that just came to me, and I'm thinking to myself, being a beginner is a huge pass. It's a huge sort of get-out-of-jail-free card. It's okay if I suck. I'm supposed to suck.
Mm-hmm.
If I've been doing it for 30 years and I still sucked, that'd be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing it for 30 days. So absolutely, go to town. Be as crappy as you want to be, Patricia. That's totally fine. It's a free pass. It was very free.
I love that. I love that. And I'm hoping that beginners out there, and I consider beginners to be anyone that has up to 3 years of experience,
mm-hmm.
Or more. Let me just say 1 to 5 years. I consider that still to be beginner.
Yeah.
Because in a lot of schools, you don't even get – even a first black belt until maybe 5 to 8, even 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
And black belt still just being a mark that says I'm good at basics.
Mm-hmm.
That's it,
yeah.
Right? And yep. I love what you just said, that you know, go out there, go to town, be sucky. And I'm hoping
yeah.
that beginners listen to that, because, you know, I've come across and met many people getting into martial arts that do have this expectation of, oh, well, I've been doing this for 2 years, or I'm a brown belt, I should be better at this or that, or why do
mm-hmm.
I suck, I'm a green belt, you know. Well, number one, you know, suck is relative. It's
mm-hmm.
that person's
Absolutely.
Perception. And
yep.
two, you know, you're still a beginner. You know, unless
yep.
someone's gotten that black belt, they can't, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, you can't say that, you know, you're good at anything, you
mm-hmm.
know. And any teacher out there, and John, you know, Sensei John will say the same thing, will say, you know, I've been teaching for however many years, and I suck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, and again, it's relative. You know, I know I've got a lot of things to work on, and I know Bob knows he does, and every teacher out there knows that they don't know it all.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, as long as, I think the difference, I guess, between teachers and beginners is that we know that we kind of have an understanding about fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just got different thought processes on how to, on how to apply these basics in different scenarios, be it,
mm-hmm.
oh, there's a guy with a baseball bat coming at my head, or I'm walking down in a parking lot, or I'm going to my car, or something doesn't feel right. We just happen to have learned through experience and through practice how to apply those fundamental concepts. And that's it. You know, so that's why I really loved what you just said. Go to town. Be sucky.
Yeah, it's very freeing to give yourself permission.
It is. Yeah, and
not
and
be perfect.
That's the idea. Give yourself permission to not be good. Don't be afraid to fail. That's it. There's like too, you know,
yeah.
like you said, there are too many people out there that have a time frame in their training or have an expectation. And on the other extreme, you know, do something for about, I don't know, 6 months and then assume they're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then go out there and go on this, you know, bandwagon of, oh, you know, this is great because, and I'll show you how good it is, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know what? You haven't even gotten good at the basics yet.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you think you can go out there and teach it? You know, that kind of thing. So pretty, I love that. That's a great, great outlook.
You know, the more you learn,
oh, yeah.
the more you don't
the
know.
Students that, the students that think they're above the basics. I mean, Brandon,
mm-hmm.
after 5 years, is still going out and doing hundreds of straight punches every class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a discipline,
you know,
that many, many people don't have. You know, many adults don't have, much less kids. And for kids to go through that kind of discipline, and I teach kids, so I'm a big supporter of, you know, learning the fundamentals and really getting down in those stances and, you know, really
mm-hmm.
pushing them hard on, you know, fundamentals that, you know, and there comes this age where, you know, kids might go, well, I would never use this straight punch
mm-hmm.
in a real fight. It's true, you won't, you know, and they question that. Well, why am I learning how to do a straight punch? You know, it's for body awareness,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the discipline. Can you sit and do 500 of those in a 90-degree horse stance? You can,
yeah,
then you can get through it. You can get through a fight then. You
and
know.
Sensei, one of the things about, like, our class is the fundamentals is one thing that most people get frustrated with, but the other thing is the mental and physical fatigue that we go through every class.
Yeah.
And that's what makes most people quit, because they feel how their body feels in the morning, you know,
yeah.
and they're, you know, and they don't want to come back.
Yeah, and it's almost as if, you know, they feel like, oh, maybe can I just take a karate pill and get good in the morning? You know,
yeah.
instead of going through the mental fatigue, the physical fatigue, the sore muscles, the why am I in a horse stance doing 1,000 punches? Let's spar. Well,
yeah.
if you and I'm a firm believer in that, if you don't have the tenacity and the will to do 1,000 punches, or 100 push-ups, or whatever, you know, your teacher wants to throw at you, then it's not going to help you when you're sparring, and it's not going to help you in self-defense. But, and again, that's kind of where I think, you know, good teachers can help their students realize that by you know, letting people understand the correlation between what they're doing and why they're doing it, and what they're doing, how it's going to help, you know, any future cool stuff, quote unquote.
Yeah,
so.
And you know, that's what my sensei tells me a lot is that, you know, you can know as many techniques and moves as you want, but if you don't have the will to work through this, through the pain, through the fight, then it's not going to mean anything.
Yeah, you know, even for our beginners, we've got this drill called the 4-second drill. You know, so, you know, before the drill actually happens, we actually tire them out. And my kids love this. They love it. We tire them out. I'll say, okay, you know, 1,000 punches, you know, 500 jumping jacks, you know, 100 push-ups, go. And, you know, they're tired, you know, okay, 20 kicks on the bag as fast as you can. Go, 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 go. And when they're all tired out, we'll partner them up and I'll say, okay, you know, low rank, punch at high rank. You have 4 seconds to get that person on the ground and ended, you know, so, you know, as far as like, you know, a scenario where someone just punched you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You have 4 seconds. Go 1, 2, 3, 4. And, you know, if they're too tired, you know, then it takes like 6 seconds, you know, whatever. Mm. But you know what I've noticed? It's the beginners that will drop their partner in 4 seconds because they don't know that there's a, you know, they haven't been around long enough to know that there's a quote-unquote a right way to take someone down or a wrong way to take someone down. They know just enough to take someone down. They're not concerned with how they look. They're not concerned about how perfect their technique is. They're not concerned about blah, blah, blah. And like in 3 seconds, these beginners will boop and drop their partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the upper belts, you know, nothing against the upper belts, but the upper belts, you know, looking for good technique, they'll look good doing it. Don't get me wrong, but it'll take about 5-6 seconds. And, you know, and I think to myself, why is that? You know, and to this day, you know, that changes every time I watch the kids do the 4-second drill. Why is it that the lower ranks are dropping their partners first, you know? So, and who knows, you know, is it because they know less techniques and they're just really good at it? That could be one, you know. I don't know, but I think it's ironic that the beginners will drop people quicker.
Well, there's something that we talk about in class about when we start drilling into sort of the more technical aspects of some of the stuff that we do, you know, the really, really complex upper level thought stuff, you know, that goes into some of these moves. And something that we talked about was that in the very beginning, you don't think about this stuff because you don't know it. You know is someone says do a wrist lock. Okay, do a wrist lock. You don't think about angle and axis and all, you know, all these different little, you know, 16 different things, I think we talked about once, that can go into it. You just do the wrist lock the way you know how to do it. Then you start to get into sort of this next level where you become aware of the stuff and you start thinking about it. And then that's all you think about. How do I do this?
Right.
How do I do the angle? How do I do... And so you become a little bit, not obsessed with it, but you start really, you know, overthinking this stuff. So you get to the point where you're so comfortable with it that you stop thinking about it. So I think probably the higher level belts are probably at that point where they know about all these different pieces, all these different aspects of what they're trying to do, and that's all they can think about. They're not yet at the point where they don't have to think about it because they've nailed it. And then the lower level belts don't really think about this stuff because they're not thinking on that level yet. You know, they don't know about this stuff yet.
Right.
So I think that's probably, you know, plus they probably don't know that they're not, you know, the lower level belts don't know that they are not really supposed to be able to, you know, they just do it.
Yeah.
You know, that they don't think about, well, I'm not really good enough to do it. They just, you tell them to do it and they do it.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah. And I guess it's still, that goes into the mindset of beginners, you know. I'd love to hear about other beginners on this. So call in, you guys, 347-677-0699. If you got less than 3 years of experience, we'd love to hear from you because, you know, we do want to hear about the beginner's thought process. while in classes, and you know, not necessarily just expectations. I mean, you know, everyone joins, you know, a class for different reasons. So everyone's got, you know, different expectations. But, you know, listeners out there, we'd really love to hear from you as far as, you know, what, you know, beginners' thought processes are, because that does affect your view on that particular art as a whole, or even your goal. So 347-677-0699. We've got still some people on chat. So if you have any questions, type away on chat. So Brandon, so how's training going so far since you're still on the line?
It's going well. We just had a 3-hour practice this morning. Where
sweet.
A lot.
Nice.
Yeah. And again, we were working on very basic techniques. I mean, we were doing straight punches for about an hour. We were doing back fists, front kicks, and putting those into combos, but still, it's not that advanced where a beginner couldn't handle it. So it's still very basic, no matter what we do, and we try to keep it basic because I think when you're in a fight that you can't you guys were saying, you can't think about it too much because nothing is going to be perfect,
exactly.
No matter what you're doing.
Exactly.
So that's one thing we talk about a lot, but most of what we do is we're very hard style. We focus a lot on going inside on people and elbowing and kneeing them and staying close in range because we try to integrate the fact that most people that you're going to meet are
mm-hmm.
not going to be trained. So, I mean, most people are going to be are flailers. They're going to be flailing most haymaker rights,
right.
Haymaker left. And so most of what we do is we go inside and stay outside of his power zone.
Nice. I'm a big lover of knees and elbows, so
yeah.
I hear you. That's awesome. And, you know, and it's rare for people to go through, you know, 3-hour classes these days. You know,
yeah.
Most classes are, you know, like in most dojos, most classes are like, what, 90 minutes or an hour, you know? That kind of thing.
Most dojos I've seen are about an hour. That's what their classes go.
Yeah. You know, and I can see, you know, I can see why, like, you know, like for my kids' class, especially the beginner's kids, you know, the class is only 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? It's only 45 minutes.
And for kids, I mean, for little kids, that's okay because most of what that is you are introducing them into this world. You're not trying to have them, you know, become great martial artists.
Exactly. It's an introduction to the basics.
Yeah.
But I'm a firm believer that in, you know, the better that you get at your basics, that, you know, that the longer training can be, you know, a great enhancement to your training, because now, you know, now that you have all the basics, now you get to learn like the deeper stuff and actually have the time to practice it over and over.
Not only that, but a lot of the more advanced stuff comes off the more basics. You are not going to be able to learn the more advanced stuff until you understand how the body works, how the very basic techniques that you'll use.
Exactly. So that's really cool to hear, man. That's 3 hours. That's awesome. I miss those days. I miss those days. I need to.
Because you were talking about it, we did do, because my sensei was doing extra hurtful today, we did about an hour of stance work.
Love it.
Doing horse stance, front stance, back stance, and doing some core training where he goes down the line and gives you a few shots.
Oh, cool.
So.
Right on. sounds like my old Kaji Kembo days. I love it.
Yeah. And So, you know, and actually whenever we do stance work, whenever we're doing it, he tells us stories about other masters to where, mm-hmm. you know, 50 years of doing this, you know, you can take a running leap at them and they will bounce off.
Right,
you know,
right.
Things like that. And to give you the idea to where you are never going, virtually in your mind, you should think, I'm never going to master this. I am just going to practice it until whenever I, you know, it's a mindset to where you're never going to fully master this. You're just going to practice it over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
So
you're just going to improve. That's the goal.
Yeah, I'm just going to improve.
Yeah,
to the best of my ability.
Yeah,
yep.
And I think that's where sometimes, you know, some beginners, how should we say, forget or do get frustrated because, you know, we all know that in order to get good at something, you have to do, you know, repetitions. There's no way around it. You have to build those mental roads to make, you know, a movement or a concept natural, right? And you know, the other day, this is a great example. I teach off campus for several schools here in Seattle, public schools and private schools. And one kid in one of my classes literally out loud said, "Oh my God, you know, we already did this. We did this like 2 months ago." That's literally what he said. "We did this 2 months ago." And I went, "Yeah, we did. So show it to me." You know, and forgot some moves and stuff like it was a form, you know, or half of a form, and forgot some moves, and you know, stances weren't quite there. I mean, they were there, but they weren't quite there. And I said, "Well, yeah, we did it 2 months ago, but seeing it and being able to do it are two different things." And that's when he realized that there is a difference between remembering that they did something and then being able to perform it.
Did he just think he was going to learn something new every day until
pretty much
until
pretty
he got
much.
To be a master?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, it was like, oh, you know, when do we? You know, it depends on which class, because you know, every day I teach two classes in the morning. I'm sort of their PE in a way for this one private school because they don't have, you know, a physical education program, so I'm it. So every day I teach two classes, and it depends on the class. You know, some classes everyone will just do what I tell them to do, you know, and have fun doing it. And some days, you know, some classes will be like, "Well, can we do this or can we do that?" They'll make requests on what they think they should learn, right? And I always have to tell them, "Well, Sifu has a plan, and let's get through the plan first before we see if we have any time to do what you want to do." And, of course, there's never any time to do what they want to do.
Of course.
Of course not, because I have a plan, right? But, you know, in the times that that happens, it depends. I mean, if they go, "Can we do, I don't know, can we play tag or something?" This is a little kid. You know, "Well, you know, let's go through what I want to do, and if you do well, we'll play tag." You know, and, you know, granted, with kids, sometimes that's how you have to motivate them to get them to do the work, you know, the reward, right? You know, dangle the carrot in front of them. So if they do really well, you know, and if what I want to cover that day is stances, and they're doing their 100 straight punches and their, you know, 100 lunges in a forward stance, then I'll go, "Okay, you guys did great. Let's play tag. Let's play stance tag." And and I'll modify the game so that way the only way you can tag people is in a stance. And at that point, do they realize they're doing any more stances? No, because they're doing tag. They're doing what they want to do. And I think that with some beginners, especially kids, you know, you do have to dangle the carrot in front of them to get them to do what you want them to do in a, you know, in a positive way. So, I don't know. I mean, that was just a That was just an off-the-cuff thought.
I bet you've never gotten the request to do horse dance for an hour, though.
No. Well, no, except for not in off-campus classes. I've never had a request to do one-hour horse dances in an off-campus class. In my classes at my studio, I get it a lot because the kids, I don't know, some of these kids are they're motivated by the challenge, right? You know, I'll tell them stories about how when I took my black belt test, you know, we were in a horse dance for an hour, and if you complained, you failed your test, you know. And they would see some of the other brown belts going up for black belts that are, you know, sweating and like crying on the inside from their horse stance. And, you know, being kids, they want to be like those people. They want to be like superhuman like that to get through that kind of pain. So in class, I hear it all the time. Sifu, yesterday I did a horse dance and asked my dad to tie me. I did it for 15 minutes without moving. And I'm like, yes, I'm proud of it, you know, and it makes me go, wow, they're doing that. And they're asking me, can we do horse dance for an hour? What do I tell them? No.
No, that's when you say absolutely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'll say absolutely. All right. Set the timer. Here we go. Ready? Boom. You know, put on the stereo, and they'll sit there for an hour. And I go, whoa, you know, and the parents come in, they go, well, why is my kid in a horse dance? Did he do something wrong? Because that's something we do too.
Of course.
You do something wrong, you're in a horse dance, right? With the pole across your legs. But, you know, then they just sit there, they're quiet, and they're sitting there for an hour, and I go, oh my God, you know, do I test them for black belt now? Because that's the attitude of a black belt right there. I've got yellow belts doing it, and it blows me away. It blows me away, you know, what they feel is important, you know, for their, you know, for their training. And it just, I almost want to cry.
Oh, you spam.
I'm getting all mushy. Sorry. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, three-hour training, that's awesome, Brandon. That's awesome. In fact, I was telling one of my classes, our Kung Fu class, that, you know, I'd like to, you know, at least a couple times a month, you know, find the means to do a three-hour class instead of just, you know, their usual 90 minutes. But the only problem right now is that I'm renting the space that we're using right now, I'm renting by the hour. You know, and it does get expensive. So it's kind of like, so, you know, we'll find some way to do it. And they're hip on it. And I think all beginners, you know, should experience that kind of training, you know, 3 hours of rough and tumble, get down and dirty, let's do it type of training. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we are running out of time already. Believe it or not, it's like we've only got about like 15 minutes left in our live cast. So 347-677-0699, that's our phone number. So if there are any students out there that that want to talk a little bit about their experience in the martial arts, please do. Who's got their computer on?
Brandon.
I don't want to turn your computer down there, buddy, because we can hear feedback. It kind of makes it hard for me to talk when I hear myself like a half second delay. So weird. So anyhow, 347-677-0699. We still got your friend John still on the line there, Patricia. So thanks for staying on, John, and listening. If you have any questions, just type away there. That was a great question that you had.
Brandon doesn't have it on. He's just listening to the conversation through his phone, through his speaker.
Yeah, but I didn't think that. Yeah, that's better. Yeah, but even if you're. Yeah, I didn't know that happens, that if you listen to the conversation on speaker, that I thought maybe the phone's microphone automatically cancels that or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyhow, 347-677-0699. No one's calling. Everyone's out to lunch.
And there's also a lot of pressure on not pressure, but it's the sensei's duty to teach them right, teach them, not teach them what their expectations are, but you know, teach them right from wrong. You know, coming up in the arts, Brandon, was always every single week, being taught these kind of techniques. These aren't techniques that you use on somebody just trying to take your lunch money.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Because they're getting taught eye gouges, throat grabs, things that
yeah.
may be devastating to somebody of a young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, especially with children, you know, that can be so impressionable, right? You know, definitely you don't want teachers, you know, teaching their kids, you know, front kick, eye gouge, elbow to the temple, you know, pinching, clawing. You don't want that being taught without the reminder.
I mean, Brandon, how many times did Scott tell you that?
Tell me not to use this stuff?
Right.
When I was a little kid, yeah, I was really impressionable. But, yeah, every single week we would learn something, you know, like we would learn knee breaks or eye gouges, or I would see him kind of teaching somebody else kind of throat grabs. You know, you just got to make sure that they know that this stuff, you know, is not to be used on other people. I mean,
right.
Well
yeah.
how do you make that distinction? I mean, to them, you know, because I don't know, you don't want to tell them that if somebody is trying to attack you or hurt you or abduct you, that you should not fight back. But it's like, how do you make that distinction for them?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, that,
yeah, it is.
You know, Bob, that gives me an idea. I think we should actually have another forum discussion about this very subject, and to have like teens and kids actually be part of the discussion, because, you know, it's true. How do you explain to a child, you know, or even a teenager, how to make that distinction? Because, you know, when you're six and someone's picking on you on the playground, that's pretty freaking scary, you know.
Yeah,
you know, and as adults, we might think, oh, it's just some kid, you know, calling your names. But we're adults, you know. We're not going to be threatened by kids calling us names and stuff. But, you know, as a child, that can be the scariest thing ever, and the stress reaction can and sometimes will be the same as an adult being attacked by a baseball bat. You know what I mean? So
right.
I guess it's a matter of how do you explain to a child how to make that distinction, and what drills, you know, can we teach to make that distinction, and even how to teach a child how to, I don't know, choose the right time to do full force technique, right? Because, you know, there have been a few times where I've had, you know, some of my little kids, you know, misunderstand that and then, you know, get mad at someone in kindergarten or whatever and kick them right in the shin, you know? And, you know, I mean, granted, I wouldn't get any phone calls from the schools or anything like that. It would be the parents that would say, well, you know, Johnny, like, kicked little Timmy in the shin because little Timmy wouldn't share his toys or something like that, you know? But I guess that's something different. I guess at that point it becomes anger management, right?
Right.
But, you know, anyhow, we'll talk about this later, Bob. I think that would be a great, future subject, and maybe we can bring on some children's instructors, people that specialize in teaching children. So that was a great question, Brandon. How do you make that distinction? You know, it's hard to say, buddy. You know, being older now, you know, you understand when to make that distinction. But, like,
yeah,
you know,
like what you were saying about their reaction might be the same as an adult getting attacked with a baseball bat, and that's very true, because the fear is still there.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get scared at the same speed, and their adrenaline is going to start pumping just as much.
Exactly.
You know? And so, yeah, I mean, as a little kid, you don't really know what's happening or what the situation is. to be able to know how to deal with it. And plus, I don't think they really can think that logically yet, or that into it to think about what they should do. They just do whatever they feel is naturally their instinct to do.
Right.
And
yeah.
So,
exactly. The fight or flight reflex works with everybody, kids, you know, adults, animals, whatever, right? And so, yeah, I think that would be a great future thing. But, you know, it also goes into the subject of, you know, beginners, you know, perspective and how we as teachers develop our methods of teaching for beginners. You know, we all know that if we're going to teach kids, we say, okay, you don't want to use this, you know, in anger. You don't want to use this against just someone that's calling you a name. You only want to use it when you feel your life is in danger. Well, how do you make that distinction? How do you explain that to an 8-year-old? I mean, if anyone out there, we still got like about 5 minutes to our live cast. If there's anyone out there that has any thoughts on how to teach beginners that beyond the usual, you know, don't use this unless you really have to type of speech, you know, give us a call. 347-677-0699.
You know, when I was a beginner, I didn't really understand this concept at all on when not to use something and when yes to use something. But that's also been a part of my training, being able to recognize threats, being able to know what I should use, what the situation is, and what's appropriate.
Exactly.
And that's been a lot of my training, along with the term, if you need to go there, how should you go about doing it?
That's awesome. And I think, this is just an observation, it's just my opinion, but I think that a lot of people out there that, you know, especially with people that are very experienced in martial arts, and even those that aren't experienced but are adults, you know, we tend to go, well, you know, it's easy to know when your life is in danger, you know, but then again, you know, it's easy to go, well, if someone attacked me, I would do this or that. But unless they've actually been in a situation where you had to fight, or a situation where, you know, your life is in danger, at that point it's all talk. You know, if I were to say, well, if I were in a situation where someone was attacking me with a baseball bat, I would do this and this and this. I'll tell you what, out of experience though, you don't think like that. You don't think, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to plan this out. It does not work that way. And you know, and nothing against martial artists out there, longtime martial artists out there, you know, that are wonderful teachers. But unless you've been in a situation like that, it's tough to make those distinctions. You know, so and I might get flack for this. I don't know. I mean, we'll find out here in a second.
and if you haven't been in one of those situations before, you're not going to think about what you're going to do. You're going to think, oh crap, there's a bat coming at me.
You know,
that's going to be your first thought. You're not going to be thinking logically, okay, I'm going to do exactly this, take him down this way. It's just going to be fight or flight and do whatever feels natural at that point.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean,
you're going to follow more of your instincts than what you've learned.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anything beginners definitely should be exposed to right off the bat. And this is why I think it's really great, Patricia, that your dojo has women's self-defense classes that focus on what really happens, right? And taking into consideration the stuff that women are concerned about, not what necessarily guys think women should be concerned about, because that's completely different, right? You know, so that's why I like why, you know, your school is doing these, you know, specialty women's classes, is that, you know, having been in an experience where someone was waving around a 2x4 with nails in it and me thinking, I'm going to die today. I peed myself. That's literally what happened. I peed myself. You know, the legs felt heavy. you know, the heavy breathing and just the panic. It still happens no matter what. I mean, you know, granted, the more you train, the calmer you are under duress, but the fear is still there no matter what. And for, you know, definitely for anyone to say that they're never afraid when someone attacks them, they're either crazy or I definitely want them on my side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we've tailored the program so that it doesn't try and teach people a ton. It doesn't teach women a ton of things that they're never going to remember. You know, it teaches them some basic, really natural movements. It doesn't feel unnatural. It's something that's pretty natural to do. So that when they're in that situation, because we know the combination is, you know, your memory's gone. You don't remember anything you can do. You've got adrenaline pumping. You get tunnel vision. You know, you lose your fine motor skills. All this stuff comes into play. So, you know, when we come up with stuff for the women to learn, you've got to take all that into effect. Otherwise, you're just setting them up for possibly getting injured, maybe getting killed.
Exactly. Well, we are unfortunately running out of time. I'd love to talk about this some more. And, Bob, remind me about this other subject about, you know, teaching, you know, kids how to differentiate between violence and stuff like that. How to teach kids about violence.
You know, that's a great subject, Cecil. And I have a quick story before we end.
Okay, sure.
A long time ago, a guy went to a very famous martial artist and personal close friend of mine and said, listen, I'm being bullied at work. I need to start training martial arts. This guy wants to fight for some unknown reason, and I need some help. I need to know how to deal with this guy. So he started training in the martial arts. Well, this guy ended up fighting this bully. The bully pulled out a knife and killed him.
Oh, shoot.
Got off for murder because he said this guy was now a trained martial artist. I was scared for my life. Yep, got off for murder. Now the instructor goes every year to this guy's grave site to deliver roses because he feels responsible for it.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Our judicial system works.
Yeah.
Because this guy was training because he was in fear for his life. He ended up getting killed.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
When that was taken before the police and the court, that was never looked further on to what went down before the fight or what each other did to signify the fight or anything?
No, because the only other cooperating witness was now dead.
Oh, man.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Dead men tell no tales.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah. Well, yeah, it would make for a great subject some other time. But thank you so much, Patricia, for being a guest co-host with us. You shared a lot of great information. On the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, if you could send a little bit of contact information for your dojo so we can plug it a little bit more and to spread the word about your women's self-defense courses over there, that would be awesome. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it was so much fun. And Brandon, thanks for calling in. That's That was awesome. Thanks for sharing your outlook on training and stuff like that. And Bob,
you're very welcome.
Awesome show. What do you think?
It was amazing. We had so much fun. Everything went phenomenal today. I'm very happy with the format. Patricia, thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you on. Brandon, great questions, great insight. I'm reeling from the show, Sifu. It was great time today.
Yeah, and the 2 hours always goes by so quickly. Thanks to all the people that logged on the chat board. Thanks to John Tobison for that great question to Patricia. So for our listeners out there, join us next week as we have Brandon's teacher's teacher, Greg Waldridge will be our guest next week for his second appearance on our show. So tune in next week while we talk about some of his bodyguard experience, his views on self-defense, his police work, and so on and so forth. So have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks, Patricia. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Brandon. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye now.
Take care, Sifu. Bye-bye. Bye.